You to another edition of the TDN Writers Room podcast. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News and also co-host the Down the Stretch radio show on Sirius XM Radio.
How y'all doing? I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports. Since we last spoke, I have worked out extensively, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to abandon my idea of playing quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. as it turns out, I've lost quite a bit of arm strength over the last 40 years. Who knew?
Well, I'm Zoe Catmon with First Racing and XBTV. And right now it looks like I've got like the worst hair in horse racing. Bill's hair actually looks good for a change. And Randy, well, you
for a change?
Well, it's usually looking like mine. Mine's definitely the I just woke up look, which is not true.
Oh, you've got that Kramer look going right now, though. That's okay.
I know. Yeah. Oh,
well. All right. Zoe, I think you look terrific. So,
yeah.
Well, guys, let's talk about a lot of big races this weekend, particularly at the fairgrounds and at Turfway Park. We have some major Derby preps. But let's go back to last week and the news out of Santa Anita, not so much in the racing, but Bob Baffert revealed, and Randy, you hinted at this on last week's show, that there was indeed a quote-unquote minor problem with Nisos. He has not worked since February 25th, and he is going to miss a month of training. Obviously, a big setback for the Baffert stable, and I was really bummed to read this because even though he wasn't going to run in the Derby, I consider him and still do one of those really special horses that comes around maybe once every 4 or 5 years. But let me start with Zoe on this because, Zoe, you'll have a better feel for that. If a horse is out of training for a month, And the issue is only minor. When can we expect him back? I know you're just kind of guessing because Bob Baffert hasn't said, but you know, look into your crystal ball. What's ahead for this horse?
Well, I can tell you one thing, which is a very good sign indeed, that he is still at the Bob Baffert barn, because I was wandering around there with Bob, actually looking for a Speedway filly that they own, and Bob's like, "Oh yeah, there's Nisos." I'm like, "Oh." Because like, he's fine. He's absolutely fine. He's just going to need some time. He kind of almost joked he's the Bob Baffert version of Flightline. So too fast for his own good. So he is in the barn, which is always a good sign, you know, when you don't really know what's going on. The fact that he's still there, he's just going to have some time. I don't know what the issue is, but it's very good news that he is still based at Santa Anita. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a very good sign. There are a lot of parallels between Nisos and Life is Good, right? Life is Good in 2021 started off with Bob Baffert. Just like Nisos, he won his first three starts by a combined 19-length margin, right? One at Del Mar and two at Santa Anita. And then Life is Good, after demolishing Medina Spirit in the San Felipe, had one workout, came out of the workout with a hind end problem. Baffert announced that he was going to be off the Derby trail. He didn't get into too much detail. But as opposed to Nisos, they sent Life is Good to Rood and Riddle in Kentucky to be checked out. And as it turned out, he had a chip in a hind ankle that kept him out until the Alan Jerkins at Saratoga in the summer. Of course, by then he was trained by Todd Pletcher because of the Medina Spirit situation. But yeah, a lot of similarities between those two horses. And I agree that it's very good news so far that Nisos has remained in the Baffert barn. I've got to be very diplomatic when I say this, because I don't want to suggest in any way that Churchill Downs would be rooting for misfortune for any particular racehorse. But if Nisos had stayed healthy and if he had dominated the Santa Anita Derby, the reality was going to be that for the 150th Kentucky Derby, it was going to be just as big a story who wasn't there with Nisos as the fact that Churchill Downs is celebrating that huge anniversary, right? It was going to be a colossal distraction. Now, if Nisos wasn't going to make the Kentucky Derby anyway, that particular narrative kind of drops by the wayside. You've still got Kenza in the Kentucky Oaks, if she stays healthy, who would have been a big favorite in the Oaks. But as far as Nisos, that's one narrative that we probably won't have to talk about nearly as much.
Randy, I think you're being too polite to Churchill Downs. I think when they read this story, they were popping open champagne bottles because, like you said, this had the potential to really be, use the right word, the distraction from the Derby. I mean, I'm not suggesting that anybody in horse racing roots for somebody's horse to get hurt. But having said that, this really puts Churchill Downs, kind of takes him off the hook a little bit here. We have the other Baffert horses that are still pointing for the Kentucky Derby, like Muth, Imagination, Maimon, but they're not Nisos. Nisos was the real deal. So the Kentucky Derby doesn't have to worry about that. So another story that broke during the week, it wasn't a surprise as we knew that they were heading in this direction, but First Racing / the Stronach Group has agreed to donate the Primaco to the state of Maryland. And what's going to happen now is this is one of the first dominoes to fall. You're going to see the state of Maryland in beginning of January 2025 take over racing at the Maryland tracks. They're looking at a setup that's going to be a lot like New York Racing Association setup. Pimlico will be torn down. They're going to have $400 million allotted to build a new Pimlico. And eventually, Laurel will be just like Aqueduct. A lot of similarities with New York. Laurel will be closed and shut down. I think this is a win-win for everybody. I mean, the Stronach Group made it clear that running the Maryland racetracks was not financially something that was doing them much good, if not a financial drain on them. The horsemen benefit because they now will have a solid future in Maryland. I don't think anybody's going to worry about the state closing these tracks down. And the Preakness will go on and will eventually be not at that dump that was a place that's been decrepit for the last 40 years, but at a bright, new, shiny racetrack in the future. So I think good news for Maryland, good news for the horsemen, good news for the Stronach Group, and good news racing. One thing I was a little surprised about, and Randy, you can maybe talk about this. Originally, we thought the Stronach Group was going to hold the rights to the Preakness in perpetuity, but it looks now that in 2026, the Preakness will be transferred to the state of Maryland as well. So I was a little surprised to see that. But, when we see so many racetracks going out of business, it's nice to see that we have a solid future in Maryland. And again, a new racetrack replacing the one racetrack that needed replacing more than any in the sport.
It looks like this is going to come to pass, but this is horse racing. This is politics. So until the governor actually signs it on the dotted line, I wouldn't count the proverbial chickens just yet. It's a lot of money involved here, $400 million for the reconstruction of Pimlico. From First Racing's perspective, yes, they were losing money on Maryland Racing. They probably are all too happy to wash their hands of it. Pimlico in particular, right? The real estate is not that valuable because it sits in an economically depressed high crime area, the Park Heights neighborhood. The track itself is beyond repair. It's going to require demolition and rebuilding, which is something that First Racing was not going to pay for. So I can imagine the conversation between First Racing and the state going something like this. The state says, hey, how do you feel about donating Pimlico to us? Deal. It's done. We'll do it. It has the potential to really help Maryland Racing. I think looking at the plans, they're maybe a little bit over-eager on some of the plans for Pimlico. The $400 million, okay, you're going to have to rebuild the racetrack. They're talking about building a hotel next to Pimlico. I kind of wonder if any racing fans are really going to want to, other than the Preakness and even the Preakness itself, to be staying at the hotel next to Baltimore. I think next to Pimlico. I think most people would prefer to stay down in the Inner Harbor. So that might be a little ambitious. But look, if they can pull it off, more power to them if it helps Maryland Racing.
Well, listen, should it all go through, not only is it going to be good for horse racing, it's going to be great for that Park Heights area. They're desperately lacking all these amenities that they are promising. They're promising football fields, buildings, parks, recreation. This is a very urban area with, as you mentioned, Randy, high crime. And I think it can just bring the neighborhood up. And if they build a hotel, like, you wouldn't believe the change. And this is a whole different parallel to Ocala. Ocala now has the World Equestrian Center. And if you've never been to it, it is absolutely amazing. It is like a Vegas-style huge hotel. The whole area of Slocala has now people coming from Wellington and moving into Ocala just because it's just gone up in leaps and bounds. It's almost impossible to buy a house there. So if this all comes to fruition, it can only mean good things for the Park Heights neighborhood and all the people it encompasses, with the fact that they're trying to put some outreach into the local community. Like, if that happens, I give it a big thumbs up.
And it's really a politically correct decision as much as anything else on two parts. Number one, the city of Baltimore takes great pride in the Preakness being in Baltimore. Just the thought of it moving to Laurel had legislators just all up in arms that Baltimore City was going to lose the Preakness. And then abandoning Pimlico and moving all the racing to Laurel was seen by a lot of politicians as just basically sticking the knife in and twisting it to the Park Heights neighborhood that's already economically depressed. So on both counts, I think this is a very PC decision by the legislators in Baltimore. And hopefully it works out for the better for everybody.
And we'll all still have our memories of Pimlico. One of my fondest ones, when Elliot Walden was still a trainer, he had Menifee in the Preakness, and I'm interviewing him, and, you know, just a few feet apart, and a rat about the size of Zoe ran right between the two of us. I was welcome to Pimlico. So, well, but anyways,
part of the plan as well that I found interesting is they're going to rotate the racetrack. They're going to basically, you know, plow it up and rotate it. So maybe this will drive a stake through the heart of all those people who still believe in the tight turns at Pimlico. Maybe the new racetrack will put an end to that once and for all.
Yeah, that myth still lives on. All right. I've already called him previously the coolest horse in horse racing. He's even cooler now. It's the Chosen Vron wins the San Carlos. You know, does that make him the fastest horse in racing? No. Does it make him the best horse in racing? No. But he should be the most popular horse in racing, because we don't get this anymore. A gelding, California bred, competing at the top of his game, 16 wins from 21 career starts. He's just an amazing horse. He's not just a good cowbred. He's a very fast horse. Now, I was a little bit dismayed to read from Eric Kruljack saying he's really only concentrating on the Bing Crosby and might run one more time between then. Come on, let's not pull this nonsense with a gelding. Come on, run him every month. But I know I sound like a broken record on that. But, some of these awards that we have, like the we need an award for a horse like this, not an Eclipse Award, but maybe it's a special award for recognizing the horse, like, you know, the blue collar hero of horse racing. I absolutely, Zoe, love this horse.
Well, he's got a couple of awards: Champion Sprinter, Horse of the Year, Cowbred Horse of the Year, Dual Cowbred Horse of the Year. He is just a really, really cool little horse to be around. Now, Eric Kruljack has tried that I'll run him once a month, and it worked for a while, and then he won by a nose, and he's like, all right, let's take a little break. And when he gave the horse the break and the time he needed, because I can remember seeing him in the paddock one day, and I'm like, he doesn't look good at all. And he won by a nose in spite of it. Eric gave him the time off he needed, and now he's taking a bit more of a conservative approach to this cowbred, who certainly does owe nobody a damn thing. He is just such a cool horse. He looks great. Hector Barrios, since the addition of him, he just knows how much he always has in the tank. It looked like the other horse was getting to him, but he just never even squeezed him at all. So very happy for John Sondrica. He is a cool little horse.
Yeah, great job by Eric Krulcheck and the ownership team throughout this horse's career, giving him time when he needed it. I don't think this is ever going to happen. I hope it never does. If it does, if the Chosen Vron ever winds up running against Senor Buscador, I don't know who I would root for.
Yeah, and what if two Phils were in that race, too? Then you'd really have a problem.
I would. You're right.
Right. All right. So we will see what happens next with the Chosen Vron, but he circled the Bing Crosby to try to win that back-to-back. That, of course, is the Grade One run at Del Mar.
All right. Well, we do need to remind you that the TDN Writers' Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland is taking entries for its 2024 Horses of Racing Age sale. The sale will be held Friday, April the 26th, after the races on the closing day of the spring meet. Entry deadline for the print catalog is April the 1st. However, supplements will continue to be considered until the sales date. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
At Keeneland, a horse will always be measured in hands. Hands that see, that sense, that speak. Hands that hold our sport to a higher standard, not for our sake, but for theirs, for the love of the horse, for generations to come.
This week's Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by Global Campaign, one of the fast sires at Windstar Farm, and he was fast. He won the Woodward Stakes at Saratoga at age 4, just like his sire, Curlin. He did it in wire-to-wire fashion with a 104 buyer speed figure, one of 4 triple-digit buyers during Global Campaign's career. Another one of those was the Peter Pan, in which he ran mile and an eighth in 146.71, the second fastest Peter Pan at the 9-furlong distance. Last week now as a stallion, Global Campaign's first 2-year-olds went on sale at OBS March. He had 6 six-figure sales, which tied for first among all first crop sires. Windstar bred Global Campaign. They co-owned him during his racing career. And now Global Campaign stands at Windstar for a fee of only $12,500. Fastest horse of the week. A 6-year-old gelding by the name of Mr. Wireless, who came back from a 10-month layoff Thursday in an open allowance sprint at the fairgrounds and won it by 4 1/4 lengths, running 6 furlongs in 108.55 seconds. Mr. Wireless is a 3-year-old, won the Indiana Derby, the West Virginia Derby, second in the Texas Derby. He had already made $1 million, very well handled by trainer Brett Calhoun for owners John Lipzinski and JIL Stable. He decided, Calhoun, after the layoff, to cut this horse back in distance and run him 6 furlongs for the first time since his career debut back in March of 2021, and it paid off in spades. Buyer speed figure, career high for Mr. Wireless, 102, making him the fastest horse of the week.
Right. Interesting that we got a horse out of a race like that for fastest horse of the week. But I got a feeling the fastest horse of this week is going to come out of the fairgrounds, because this is obviously the top card in racing. Bunch of stakes races, top 5, the Louisiana Derby. And, you know, a Louisiana Derby winner hasn't won the Kentucky Derby since Grindstone in 1996. But this race seems to get stronger every year. And, you know, I think people like the distance. They like the spacing. Nothing wrong with the purse, $1 million. So, but this year, I don't know that the Kentucky Derby winner is necessarily in this field. Like most people, I believe that Track Phantom is the best horse in the race. He's coming off a second place finish behind Sierra Leone and the Risen Star. But how about that outside post, Randy? Do you think that's going to be a problem for him, or do they have enough time to maneuver him over Joel Rosario to get a decent trip? Because he's starting out in the parking lot.
I think it'll be zero problem, just because he looks like, as usual, the controlling speed in the race. So from post 12, if he was a horse that ran mid-pack in a 12-horse field with a group of horses right inside of him, he would have the potential to be caught very wide. But I don't think there's going to be any horses between Track Phantom and the rail by the time he's navigating the first turn. So I don't think it's going to be any problem for him at all. It's an excellent field in here. You know, that you don't have, obviously, Sierra Leone, who won the Risen Star, who's being pointed for the Bluegrass. But you've got some pretty interesting horses other than Track Phantom. For example, I'm kind of interested in Honor Marie, who came back with a fifth place finish in the Risen Star coming off the layoff on a sloppy track. You know, how much did the sloppy track impact that race and the slow pace as well? Hall of Fame was very well supported in the Risen Star. It was his first time ever in a stakes race and on a sloppy racetrack. He took a lot of kickback, didn't handle it all that well. If the track is fast on Saturday at Fairgrounds, will Hall of Fame bounce back with a performance similar to what he did when he broke his maiden very impressively? You know, there are a lot of options in here besides Track Phantom, but I do think definitely that Track Phantom is the horse to beat. One other note about this race that's interesting. No Louisiana Derby winner has won the Kentucky Derby since Grindstone in 1996. But interestingly enough, two of the last four of the Kentucky Derby were graduates of the Louisiana Derby, Mandaloon and Country House, both of whom won the Kentucky Derby via disqualification. So there is that. And then Funny Side also ran in the Louisiana Derby in 2003, didn't win it, and then went on to run in the Wood Memorial subsequently, but he also came from the Louisiana Derby to Kentucky.
Halfway down the rabbit hole. That was a nice little tidbit.
Halfway.
I like that. As far as the post positions are concerned, it doesn't matter. I mean, you need to hand in your jock's license if you can't figure out a trip. They're going 1 3/16. They start at the head of the lane. That's like one of the longest stretches in horse racing. So the break really shouldn't garner a problem for anyone in this field, as far as I'm concerned. I really like Agate Road in here. He's only run twice on dirt and he's been second both times. He was getting to No More Time in the Sam F. Davis. No More Time, of course, came back just to get mugged in the Shadow of the Wire in the Tampa Bay Derby. So that form holds up. He's going to get ridden by Irad Ortiz. I believe he is the best horse in the race. I really, really like him. Now, numbers wise, he doesn't own like career high bias speed figures. The horse right to his inside, Antiquarian, is probably one of the most interesting horses in the race. Just two lifetime starts. He's going to be battling up there on the front end. Already owns a win at the Fairgrounds, and he'll get Johnny V aboard. And one thing about Johnny V is he is very, very tactical. He's going to send that horse from the get-go. So those would be my two, as well, of course, as the Asmussen horse in there. So it's going to be a good race. Is the Kentucky Derby winner in here? I don't think so, but I do like Agate Road.
All right, so the fillies will get ready for the Kentucky Oaks in the Fairgrounds Oaks. That's the 11th race on the card. And the horse that I have number one in my Road to the Kentucky Oaks poll that I do for the TDN, Tarifa, is in this race. Brad Kosk, a Dolphin by Bernardini, is on a two-race winning streak. Looked really good winning the Rachel Alexander over Intricate, who she'll face again on Saturday. Intricate, trained by Brendan Walsh. Now, this is a race, again, that just comes up strong year after year after year. I think the best filly in the country, other than Kinza, which, as Manny mentioned, is not going to run in the Kentucky Oaks because of the Baffert situation. But I can easily see Tarifa winning this race and then going on to winning the Kentucky Oaks. And I think Brad Cox is a very good trainer all across the board. He can do everything. But, boy, is he good with three-year-old fillies and young fillies. Right. I mean, it seems like every year he's got 10 of these things. And, you know, starting with Monomoy Girl. So, Randy, what do you think of the Fairgrounds Oaks?
Let me give you a different opinion here. I agree that Kinza would be the favorite in the Kentucky Oaks. She looks like the best three-year-old filly in the country. I agree that Tarifa is the horse to beat in the Fairgrounds Oaks. I don't think Tarifa is the best Kentucky Oaks contender in the Brad Cox barn. That, in my opinion, would be Impel, who I believe is going to run in either the Ashland or the Fantasy Stakes. She's never run in the stakes yet. She's 2-for-2 lifetime, owned by Judmont Farm. She was just sensational in an allowance race at Oakland. But Tarifa is obviously in with a hell of a shot as well. I mean, she looked good in the Rachel Alexandra, the race before, in the allowance race at the Fairground. She had a really wide trip and won anyway. She'll be rematched against Intricate, who was a good second place finisher in her first start of the year. There are a couple of others in there that are, you know, kind of interesting. Vivi's Dream, for example, post position number one, has had back-to-back dull efforts, one at Churchill, one at the Fairgrounds, but both on sloppy racetracks. If you can say that those poor efforts were the result of the racetrack and just say maybe she doesn't like the slop, her earlier races are good enough to be very competitive in here. Now, she's by Mottole, so she may not want to, you know, this may not be her best distance. But, yeah, I agree Tarifa's the horse to beat, but it's an interesting race.
Do you think Florent Giroux wishes he could get back on Tarifa after a dull effort from Alpine Princess last time?
Well, Alpine Princess is Giroux will be at Oaklawn.
Okay.
On Saturday to ride a couple of horses for Brad Cox, First Mission and Nash. Alpine Princess is going to run in the Bourbonette at Turfway as opposed to this race. She was entered in both races. So, yeah, but I agree. Giroux probably wishes that he was on Tarifa. Yeah.
Then it's Tarifa all the way for me. She's the best filly in the race as far as I'm concerned.
The New Orleans Classic is also on the card at the Fairgrounds. And we will have an interview coming up in our Green Group Guest of the Week is Jake DeLome. Football fans know him as an NFL quarterback. Horse racing fans know him as the owner of that Louisiana-bred terror, Touch Upon a Star, who is going to be a very interesting horse this weekend at Fairgrounds. They also have the Mervyn Muniz on the card, so a terrific card on Saturday at the Big Easy NOLA, the Fairgrounds.
The TDN Writers Room is also brought to you by the PHBA. If you haven't been watching the podcast, that stands for Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association. A trainer, Butch Reed, has 3 3-year-olds that he's going to be running at Aqueduct on the Wood Memorial card or undercard, right? All three of them, Pennsylvania breds. First of all, there's his wood runner himself. That's Uncle Heavy, who's got a shot. He had a workout on Saturday at Parks, his first official work since he won the Withers at Aqueduct back on Feb 3. Reed will also run Pennsylvania bred Carmelita, co-owned by Cassius King and LC Racing. She was second in the Busher at Aqueduct, and she's going to run in the Withers on the wood undercard. And then there's Maximus Meridius, who was fourth in the Gotham, who will run in the Bay Shore at 7 furlongs. So that's 3 Pennsylvania breds to keep your eye on Wood Memorial Day at Aqueduct.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late is a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a 3-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Every sire hopes to have a son to follow in his footsteps.
An impressive debut.
For Munnings, that son is Jack Christopher.
Jack Christopher to win the champagne.
Unbeaten grade 1 winner at 2. Dual grade 1 winner at 3.
And he is pouring it on here. It is Jack Christopher winning the grade 1 H. Allen Jerkins Memorial.
Jack Christopher.
Well, it's time for the Coolmore Stallion of the Week, and this week it is Jack Christopher. His first foals are on the ground, and they are Cracker Jacks indeed. Here's a look at some of them, and we're going to start off with a colt out of Laurel Canyon, bred by I Hope Farms, LLC. Now let's take a look at a colt out of Wise Strike, who is bred by Black Ridge Stables. And finally, we're going to take a look at a filly out of My Sugar Bear, bred by Alan Poindexter. I mean, Zoe, you have talked a lot on this podcast about how much you like Jack Christopher, what a good mover he is, what a good racehorse he was. What do you think about his foals? What have you seen?
Crackerjack. Did you just make that up, Bill? I kind of like that.
No, somebody above my pay grade came up with that.
Well, I'm going to agree with them. Crackerjack is a very apt word. Listen, Jack Christopher is a son of Munnings. And the one thing that's really surprised me by all the foals that we've seen thus far, obviously they're all very cute and I've never seen a really uncute foal, but he's throwing foals with a lot of leg, which is really what I want to see from Jack Christopher, because he was more of a blocky son of Munnings. And the fact that he's able to throw these babies with a good bit of leg, they look very athletic. And there are some beautiful pictures of these foals dancing and bouncing around the paddocks. I like what I've seen so far. I really do.
So in the human world, there are ugly babies. You've never seen an uncute foal?
No, and I've seen plenty of ugly babies. You are correct. But there is no such thing as an ugly foal, other than I mentioned before, one that I have bred that looks like a baby. But no, foals are very cute. I obviously have no children.
Jack Christopher, a three-time grade one winner by Munnings, stands at Coolmore.
It's that time of the show again. The TD and Riders Room is brought to you by the Green Group, a tax accounting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry and designed to save you money on taxes. And this one should be fun. You ready? Green 18, Green 18, Omaha, Omaha.
And welcome in now the Green Group guest of the week. It's Jake DeLome. If you're a football fan, you remember him as a quarterback for the Carolina Panthers for many years. If you're a horse racing fan, you know him as the owner of Touch Upon a Star and several other thoroughbreds. Jake, thanks so much for joining us here on our podcast. And first of all, let's get right to the first question. Where is he going to run this weekend? You're entered in the New Orleans Classic and then cross-entered the next day in the Star Guitar Stakes. Let's break some news.
Well, I'm not sure exactly yet. The only thing I'm going to tell you is this. He's doing extremely, extremely well. And, if ever there was an opportunity to take a shot, maybe it could be this weekend. But I'll just tell you, he's doing really, really well right now. So we'll see.
So before we get into your background in horse racing and even some football questions about this particular horse, I mean, this is a winning machine. 11 wins and 14 starts. You bought him for 15 grand. He's knocked out 700 grand. What has his success meant to your family operation?
Listen, Randy, it's been he's been a dream come true, to be quite honest. I'm third generation, okay, and thoroughbred racehorse owner and breeder, and it's just I've bought many horses that I think were some good horses. I bought some that were not so good, but we loved them all the same. I mean, and just I was lucky enough to purchase him at the Texas Yearling Sale. He was one that I followed him along. The breeders, Coteau Grove Farm, they've done a marvelous job of breeding some fine animals. And I know Andrew Carey is their bloodstock advisor, and I've been on Andrew since 2007, the first time I went to Keeneland and bought my first mare there off of Hillendale Farms. He was the director of sales then. And so we developed a friendship over the years, and so when he comes in, he'll stay at the house. We'll go to Coteau Grove and see the horses. And there was something about this horse I always liked, watch him grow up. He looked very much like his sire, Star Guitar, who was a great regional racehorse here in Louisiana. Fantastic horse by a great owner, Miss Evelyn Benoit. And he was a legendary horse here. It was one I had my eye on. And I try to buy a couple of yearlings every year. Try to breed a couple and things like that. We're a fairly small stable, 8 to 10 horses. And so he went to the Texas sale, and I'll be honest with you, I bid one time. I just kind of watching the action, and I was prepared to go a lot higher. And it's just one of those deals. I think the COVID situation could have had something to do with it at that moment in time. And I was lucky enough to get him. And to think he would be this type of racehorse, I don't think anybody ever thought that. But he's a horse that was broken by Al Pike. And then we gave him the summer off. He was this big horse, and we brought him back. And a matter of fact, I had him in the first week of the fairgrounds of his two-year-old year. His shins got a little hot on us right before the week prior to the race. I had him in, worked in the next morning, and shins were a little hot. And we thought he was a pretty nice horse. He was showing it. And so we did some things, gave him his time, and really and truly rushed back to get him to his first start. A couple of summers ago, the purse differential from the fairgrounds to the racing in the summertime in Louisiana was significant. You're running for a $50,000 maiden special weight by the end of March at the fairgrounds, and 2 weeks later, you're running out of Angelin Downs for a $25,000 pot. That's a big difference. They've kind of rectified that. They've done some reduction in dates due to the horse population here in the summer. It's a little bit less than it is in the winter. And to be honest, we probably rushed him to get to that race, to be quite honest. And sure enough, as fate may have it, he doesn't break for whatever reason. The first time he never broke and got rushed up in the traffic. It was a tough task, but he still came to run second. And we knew, you know, that we had a good one. And we've just tried to manage him and do the right thing with him from here on out.
Well, Jake, you speak like a horse trainer. You're a football player, but you've always been a horseman first. Like, I spent a long time in Louisiana. I think we probably know the same people. You grew up with Robbie Alvarado. Did you want to be a jockey first before a football player?
Yeah, you know, there's pictures of me riding a Shetland pony. Name was Snowball that we had. There's pictures of me at 2 years old in a saddle working on my seat. I was going to be too big by the time kindergarten came around to be a jockey. This is no lie. They still tease me to this day. I would ride the couch in the house, the sofa. I would get on it. A retired jockey gave my dad a helmet and all that stuff. And I would ride my bike up and down the driveway of the house with a whip. And yeah, I loved it. I didn't grow up hunting, fishing, golfing. I grew up and went to school. We played sports and we had the racehorses and we had the quarter horses until 93 till we made the switch over. And that was my love. And I think we all know, as we can all attest on this site right now, that it's once it gets in your system, you just can't get rid of it.
So did you actually ride in any of those famous Bush League match race?
No, I didn't. I went to the Bush tracks growing up. I absolutely did. You know, the horse movie Casey's Shadow, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. And Walter Matthau is the star in there. And it was about a Louisiana quarter horse. And there's a scene at the Cairn Crow Raceways of Walter Matthau ordering a beer. And my grandfather is the one that gives him the beer. And they're playing cards. And my grandfather is speaking to him in Cajun French. So it's our history runs deep with the thoroughbred industry, especially with the horse industry, especially in Louisiana. And I'm very proud of that. And I love it.
Jake, it's not just you. This is a family operation. Your brother Jeff is listed as the trainer, and your father Jerry is also involved in this. But I take it you're a lot more than just an owner, that you're really hands-on. Tell me what your role is in Set Hut Stable.
Pretty much any and everything. You know, we're I'd like to think we're a selfless stable, to be quite honest. Set Hut is the owner, and Dad and Jeff both train. But I'll be honest, it's all of us. We're there every day. You know, I have Big Joe Galleon. Big Joe's been our groom for well over a decade. And we have another guy, Philippe, that's with us. And so it's a family affair. And needless to say, Jeff and I were raised in following what we learned from our father, from Dad. And certainly, had I not played sports, I have a pretty good inclination that if the racing is what I wanted to do, I would have liked to think maybe I would have gone to work with some other trainers. So to speak. I'm one, I just kind of believe you need to surround yourself with people smarter than you. But lucky enough, you know, with football, that world, it led me down a wonderful life, to be quite honest. And that's given me a chance to expand on the racing industry part of it, especially when I was done. And so I'm there every day and we work hard at it. We enjoy it. You know, to say there's always an agreement, no, but for the most part, we were always raised the right way and doing what's right by the horse. And being a small stable, everything's individualized per horse, and we just try to enjoy it. And I don't have to answer to anybody. I think that's the greatest thing. I don't have to answer to an owner. I don't have to rush to try to run here or run there. And listen, I pay all the bills. Two nights ago, I paid all the bills, so I know what goes in and out every month.
So if I'm not mistaken from what I've read, Jake, your entire family lives essentially in adjoining houses right there in Brobridge, all right there together, right?
We don't live. Mom and Dad live on 10 acres next to me. I live on 5. My brother lives down the road.
You're all right there.
Yeah. It used to be the country when I was growing up, but not anymore, man. Lafayette's kind of growing. Lafayette's a city probably about 2 miles from here, from where I'm sitting at. And so it's terrible and yet good in the same sentence. You know, I like having that peace and quiet.
So when you were playing in the NFL, when you're in the Super Bowl and you're very nearly beating Tom Brady, right, and in a great Super Bowl performance, did you always know that when you hung up your cleats, you'd go back to Brobridge and this is what you'd be doing?
I always knew we'd probably come home because my wife and I, Carrie, we're high school sweethearts and her family's from here. And listen, we love Charlotte. Probably move back tonight and enjoy. My girls, both my daughters loved it. And I still get to go back a lot. I do the radio for the Panthers during the season. And so that's our second home. But had an inkling we'd be moving back home and doing the horses. Listen, football gave me a chance to stand on it. And I love it. And it helps fill that competitive void. I mean, I retired. I was, 37 or 38 years old. But I'm retired from football, not from real life. You're just kind of getting started, so to speak. And so that's given me that avenue. And I've never looked for anything to do once I finish playing. I've talked to many guys that it might have worked out well for them. And they need something to do because you're used to just this lifestyle of work, 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 work. And I think anyone can attest being in the horses that it's a it's work, 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 work. It's all the time.
Wow. It's really been interesting watching your progression over the years and now coming back to Bowbridge. I've been to Bowbridge. I've been to Carencro, if you can believe that or not. You married into the Melanson clan, and there are an awful lot of them around Louisiana. Every time you turn around, guys, if you don't believe me, there is a Melanson in here. There is
one. It's like Smith.
Yeah, exactly. You walk in the jocks room, there is a Melanson. Can you regale any stories that you could perhaps tell on this podcast, some Cajun funny stories about you growing up?
Well, I just think the racetrack is such a tight-knit community. And certainly, I think everyone knows all the jockeys from this area and things like that. And so, you know, to say there's funny stories, you know, I was gone for so long. And so I guess the time when you really and truly are a knucklehead, the 18, 19, 20-year-olds when – I was playing college football and then I left. And so I wasn't, it was probably a good thing. You know, I was able to go and learn, get my way through life. But one thing that we still get a chuckle sometimes, certainly people from Louisiana are very proud people. And everybody in this area was very proud of me, just like we were of all the jockeys from our area, you know, from Robbie and good friends with Race of Bill, Eddie Delahousie, good friends with all those people. And you know, like when BJ Hernandez, when he won the Breeders' Cup Classic and listening to BJ getting interviewed on horseback after. I mean, that was a great moment for everyone in this area. We're proud people. But we were at the old Evangeline Downs, which is in Carencro at the time. And there was a jockey by the name of James Avant, and he wanted me to throw him a football. And it was during the break on a Saturday morning. Obviously, I was home at that time. It must have been the off season, and so, you know, I was going to throw him the football, and he's not a big guy. And I never forget some of the people, like I said, their characters, they were like, hey, light him up. Like, don't just toss him. So I went back, and I was able to kind of just put a little something on it where the ball just right through his hands went all the way up. He kind of fell down, and it made for a good laugh, you know. So I appreciated what they did. I think they appreciated what I did. And so, yeah, things like that. The one thing that I always thought about the track and the backside of the track, it's a locker room. It truly is the locker room. And that's what guys miss when they finish playing sports. You miss that that camaraderie that you have with and you know, there's a lot of smack talking, to say the least. And so that's always fun. I always love that.
And I have a really good story I just want to tell really quickly on Ray Sabil, because you know Ray, we all know Ray, and we all love Ray. So I just started riding at Arlington Park. I was in the jocks room. And yeah, I'd lived in Louisiana. I'd lived in New Orleans. And I knew Ray outside of the track and met him and him and his wife for a couple of beers and everything. So I walk in the jocks room the first day. And Ray starts talking to me. And he's like, Zoe, can you come over? I'm like, geez, Ray, are you okay? I'm like, what's wrong with you? Because I had no idea he had a stutter, and everyone started laughing. And Ray was like, it's okay, Zoe, because if I have a beer, I don't stutter. He said, so. He goes, if I'm ever in the box room and I'm stuttering, don't ride with me that day. It was just like the funniest thing.
Yeah, Ray's a character, man, and he's still around, and I still see him fairly often. And, you know, it's such a tight-knit community, you know, and you know, even going back to, you know, touch upon a star once he started running, you know, you get the text after a big performance and people are truly happy for each other, you know, and I can't really say I think that's is that way everywhere, but I just people down here, we're very proud when there's a good horse that can go on and do nice things.
Zoe, you don't sound like you spent a whole hell of a lot of time in Karen Crow.
I had to go there. I went with a couple of the outriders because I'm like, I have to get to Karen Crow. We went to Lafayette. it was awesome. I did a lot of really cool stuff in New Orleans. I love New Orleans.
Yeah, that's a fun time. You know, I was with the Saints my first 6 years. And so on Mondays, they used to run on Mondays at the fairgrounds. And I know I would always go after meetings on Monday or whatnot because Tuesday was our so-called off day. But Brian Cox, the former linebacker, right. Brian and I, his last year was in New Orleans, and he and I became extremely close. And there was nothing greater that I enjoyed when Brian and I, as soon as we finished meetings on Monday, we'd head down to the fairgrounds and watch some races and things like that.
Jake, you were born and raised in Louisiana. You played college football in Louisiana. You race in Louisiana. And those are all great, great places for everything. The racing in Louisiana is really good. But do you ever think about going, you know, more national, maybe having a string in Kentucky? Or are you just Louisiana through and through?
Yeah, listen, we'll never have a string. I mean, listen, home is home. And we're pretty grounded. We're pretty rooted down here. Yeah, would I like to have something to run in those big days? Sure, I think so. But I'm a member of our Louisiana Thoroughbred Breeders Board. I think we have a phenomenal program here in Louisiana. We have 4 racetracks that run year-round. And we have a great product, in my opinion. I think they're getting better and better each year. I do breed a few in Kentucky yearly. They stay out at Goodwin Farm in Paris, Kentucky. And so I do dabble. I've done some pin hooking that I enjoy. I enjoy every facet of the game. And so who's to say, you know, there might be one that maybe I could breed to go on and do some good things. Or if we could get a Louisiana bred that could possibly be on the Derby trail at one point. I mean, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I'm a big proponent of our Louisiana racing.
I will have a couple of straight football questions to ask you when we get done with the horse racing part of this, but I got one more thing. Your football career was punctuated by just sheer determination and willpower and overcoming the odds, right? You weren't that heavily recruited out of high school. You wound up breaking all the records for the Raging Cajuns at Southwest Louisiana. Then you weren't drafted in the NFL. You wound up having to go to NFL Europe for a couple of years, playing over there, and you finally got your foot in the door at Carolina, and boy, you made the best of it. Have any of those lessons, do they apply at all to what you're doing right now?
Well, I think it does. You know, listen, I always go back to the 20% rule, and guys that I played with, I'll never forget, we always had our first mandatory mini camp in the offseason was always the weekend after the NFL draft, which is the last weekend in April. Well, that's the first weekend in May. So that's the Kentucky Derby. So it's the Saturday afternoon. You have 2 practices on, you know, Friday on Saturday and 1 Sunday. What I'd run in from the afternoon practice on Saturday afternoon, I hurry up getting the training room to try to watch the Derby. And all the players would come in and they were watching. And I'd get the question, you have one running in there? And I'm like, you think I would be sitting right here if I had one running? Well, let's get one. I'm like, it's kind of hard just to get one. They're some of the richest people in the world haven't conquered the Derby. And so it just teaches you that, listen, would I love to have won every game in the NFL? Absolutely. But that's not realistic. It's the same thing with the horses. I mean, you're a 20% success rate in the horse industry. You're doing well. Find me an NFL quarterback with a 20% win rate. Well, you're getting traded. You're getting cut. I mean, I think it just keeps you grounded. And I'm a big believer. I just think I love buying at a yearling sale or raising a baby and just kind of going through that whole process with them. There's just something about it, like watching them grow. It's like a team, watching them grow, you know, and just kind of this the development of them and where can you point to a certain race or point to a game. And yes, we're going to get to this point, but you got to go through this process. So I think that's what I love about it, just the similarities of not sports. They teach you failure. They teach you perseverance. I mean, and this game is difficult, man. This game is hard. Yeah, and you gotta enjoy the good times, and that's something that I have trouble with. I'm not one that likes to like relive great moments. I hate to be that way. I was just always of the mode. Okay, what's next? Got to grind, and you know, I'm trying to truly enjoy this horse and enjoy all the horses we have. But that's just kind of the mindset that you had. I know that I had when I played. You just gotta work and grind, and the most successful people are the ones who kind of put in all that work and. Yeah, it didn't work out for me draft-wise and things of that nature, but, you know, college was a great experience for me. That was awesome. I started 4 years. It took a while in the NFL, but that was okay because I wasn't ready. Had I been thrown into the fire like some of these guys, you know, we want instant success right away. It's ridiculous what we ask some of these college quarterbacks to come in to do, but I was lucky. I went to NFL Europe twice. I backed up a guy. Oh, yeah. His name was Kurt Warner. He was 26. Yeah. You know, he was 3 years removed from being in an NFL camp because he struggled. He couldn't make it. Went to arena football, established himself, became the MVP. And then lo and behold, he goes on and have that career. So I'm with him. And I'm like, man, talent wise, we're the same exact measurables. It'd be 6'2", 220. And that's what we are. And arm and all that, but he was more mature and ready at the time. And then watching him have that success, it gave me the confidence just to keep going and never stop. And, you know, I just think that's what it is sometimes. You have to be in the right place at the right time. And lucky enough, I was able to get in the right place at the right time in Carolina, and it worked out. We had a good run. We had a real good run.
So your 20% rule, right? It kind of applied to the Panthers last year. Unfortunately, 2-15, Bryce Young spent too much time on his back.
Right.
Give the Panthers fans some encouragement now looking forward.
Well, I don't think we'll be 2-15 this year. I'll say that. Listen, last year was tough. I don't think there's anybody on the planet, including myself. And yeah, do I try to look at things through a Panther lens or a Panther tilt? Absolutely. But I try to be as realistic as possible. I thought we were a 6-win team, hopefully 7. You never know. Rookie quarterback and But listen, it was just rough, and we struggled. We had injuries, especially offensive line-wise. I think we had, 15 different combinations at the guard position for us, and that just didn't work. And so, listen, Bryce, I give this kid so much credit. I think he'll learn more from his rookie year than he will the rest of his career in the NFL. It was tough duty. And certainly the whole C.J. Stroud and the Texans, them playing extremely well, C.J. playing very well. And the national media and the narrative around it, did the Panthers make the right decision or the wrong decision? Look, we don't know, but I just know this. You'll see Bryce have a true opportunity this year. Not saying he didn't have the right opportunity last year. It was just difficult. It just bad circumstances, man. And, you know, I go back to one of the greatest ever play in Peyton Manning, and we go back, our friendship goes back to high school, and to watch him have the record for interceptions, winning 3 games as a rookie in the NFL, it just goes to show you it's hard. But I like what we're doing free agency-wise. We're going to protect Bryce. We're getting some pieces for him to be able to throw the football. And so anxious to see some progress this year. But one thing I'll tell you, he's tough. You know, people can talk about his size all you want, but he's tough. He got sacked, I think, 62 times last year, not counting the many times he got hit. He's tough.
So one more quick question. You just kind of led into it. You've known Peyton since high school. Apparently, you've known Eli since elementary school. When you watch Monday Night Football, do you watch the regular broadcast or do you watch the Manning cast?
Well, I kind of do both, but honestly, I'm a huge Troy Aikman fan and Joe Buck. I just think Troy was always, to me, he was always the standard what an announcer should sound like. I think he does a fantastic job. So I try to do both, but I love watching Peyton and Eli. Eli was in high school when I got to know them, starting to work in the Manning camp when we were all in college, and Eli was still in high school. So it's a deep history with that family and just great family, and Archie, probably know Archie better than both the two boys. And so it's always fun, and I always kind of send Peyton a nugget or so if there's a team they're playing and things like that. And so, and you got to remember, Peyton's best friend in the world is a guy by the name of Brandon Stokely, who played wide receiver for 15 years in the NFL. Brandon was my college receiver, and Brandon's dad was our college
coach. Wow.
So there's a deep, deep history. And needless to say, there's some thick skin that might go through some text messaging and things like that. But I do enjoy watching them on Monday nights. They do a great job. And well, I think the thing I enjoy more than anything is the reaction to the plays. When you see, like, timeout, call a timeout. You know, just like that's something that it'll never go away from you. Luke Kuechly and I do the radio in Carolina, and I can the 8 games a year we do together, because there's some we do apart. Like, I'm bruised up on this side of my body, and he's bruised up on his left side of his body. Because we hit each other, we get so mad or so aggravated, and we see something coming. It's just, you know, we're kids, and we love it. We just played a child's game for a long time.
Terrific. Well, Jake, you've been tremendous with us. I appreciate you spending some time with us. Good luck with Touch Upon a Star, if it's in the New Orleans Classic. Or the Star Guitar Stakes, I'm sure you'll be very competitive, if not.
Yeah, listen, I'm so guarded when it comes to questions.
Yeah.
But that was my life, you know, like you never gave the opponent anything, you know, like it was all.
Okay.
I get teased a lot by a lot of my friends. As a matter of fact, a couple hours ago, I had one asking me, which day you running? And I said, I'll be running this weekend. And he said, you got to be running me, right? I said, well, Saturday or Sunday is this weekend. I just don't know. But no, we're excited about this weekend. And listen, it's an honor to be in races like this and to have a horse that hopefully shows up. You know, he's doing great. Let's just hope we don't screw it up.
Well, like Randy said, he's a win machine. So I'm sure that no matter where you wind up, he'll give a good account of himself. Once again, thanks so much, Jake, for spending some time with us.
All right.
And best of luck this weekend.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate everything you guys do.
Thanks, Jake.
As the Green Group guest of the week, Jake DeLome will receive a free 1-hour tax consultation with the Green Group. For more information on how the Green Group can save you money, www.greenco.com is where you want to go. We'll be right back after this message from Lynn Green et al.
Are you paying too much in taxes? The Green Group can help. There's a reason the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisors. They save you money and share successful strategies. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport, like Eclipse Award-winning champions Jaywalk and Wonderwheel. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
On this week's edition of First Things First, as a very smart lady, Sue Finley, once told me, you can't have enough Frankie. I caught up with Frankie Dettori and basically just wanted his plan moving forward for the rest of the year and asked him, where did that suntan come from? Oh, morning, love. How are you?
Morning, Zoe. I'm good. Look in my office.
It's fabulous, isn't it?
What's not to like, right?
You're looking pretty tan. Where have you been?
I've been to Cabo in Mexico for my wife's 50th birthday. Three of my kids came over from England, so we had a couple of days. Beautiful. We celebrated in style, and yeah, what a lovely place.
So life's treating you good. So what are your plans for the future? Everyone wants to know where Frankie's going. I gather you're going to Dubai. We just saw Newgate work. You look really good.
Yeah. Bob keeps me well away from him. I don't think I never rode him in the mornings. he's fulfilled one of my ambitions to win the big cap. So I love those dearly. Last year, I thought could have been my Kentucky Derby horse. Unfortunately, I had an injury. But our system go. He's going to Dubai. And I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I'm going to go next week.
And then what are your plans for the summer?
Then I come back here. Is the Santa Anita Derby early April. Then I think we have a little bit of a break here. So possibly Ron Anderson, my agent, said that I could end up in Keeneland. And, you know, I'm really trying to find a horse for the first Saturday of May. That's my main ambition. A lot of racing coming up, good key pointers for the race. So I got to keep my eyes well peeled for that. And then we see in the summer, could be Delmar or could be Saratoga. I leave that up to Ron Anderson, my agent. But, you know, I'm fully committed to do the full season here. So
if you had a choice, Saratoga, Del Mar.
I've never been to Del Mar.
You never been to
no,
Del Mar?
I've been to Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup, but that's not different. So, you know, I'm very flexible. I traveled all my life, and now it's just me and my wife, so we don't have the kids to worry about. So I'm wherever my agent sends me, I'll go. So I'm looking forward to explore and, yeah, and enjoy myself. Really, I'm really enjoying it. So far, it's going so really well, and may long continue, Zoe.
No regrets? What about this winter? Can we expect you back here this winter? I mean, are we planning another two or three tours of Frankie in Southern California?
Listen, at the moment, I committed here. When I say here, it's in the U.S. I have a free visa, so depends, you know, how my legs are keeping up. I have no plan to retire. I'm enjoying it, and, you know, I can't see so far ahead. At the moment, you know, my plan for this year, and, you know, if things are going well, I'm going to carry on.
Could you imagine even riding in the Derby, the Kentucky Derby?
I did once in 2000. It was an amazing experience. And, yeah, look, it is the race. It's the race that even people not in the sport are familiar with. So, you know, being in the lineup is like being a winner already. Then to have a horse with a chance, be even better. That's my main goal at the moment.
Has anyone called you from Europe, from England, to try and get you to maybe go back for some of the big races there?
At the moment, I can't see past Dubai or, you know, or this summer here. So I have, I'm focusing 100% in the US. I want to show everybody that I'm committed. I'm not going to start going back and forward. I'm happy here. And yes, I don't want to lose the business. So I want to mainly stay and do the best I can here.
Brilliant. Thanks, Frankie.
Ciao.
Always great to catch up with Frankie Dettori, and he'll be back in action here this Friday at Santa Anita, 1 o'clock post time, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Fancy highlight race for this weekend is one of my favorite races, and that will be the San Luis Rey on Saturday at the Great Race Place.
All right, let's head to Turfway Park, the other racetrack this weekend that has a big card, highlighted by the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and that's a Grade 3 event, $700,000 purse. The last winner of the Jeff Ruby wasn't called the Jeff Ruby in 2011. I don't remember what it was then because race's name has changed so many times. It was Animal Kingdom. He came back to win the Kentucky Derby. But how do we not remember Rich Strike, who was third in this race before he pulled off the upset of the century in the 2022 Kentucky Derby? Handicapping this race, I think it's a very difficult puzzle, for the simple fact is you've got a lot of really good horses that have never run on synthetic surfaces. So, you know, what do you do with them? How are they going to perform on the synthetic? I don't really know. That's why I'm leaning toward Endlessly, the winner of the El Camino Real. One start on synthetic for trainer Michael McCarthy, and one got an 87 buyer in that race. But again, there are so many other horses in here that are just sort of mystery horses. And Agate Road. Does anyone know if Agate Road's running in this race or the Louisiana Derby, Randy?
Todd has apparently not yet decided.
Okay, so we're going to wait.
This is now, we're talking on Tuesday. By the time this actually, you know, airs, so to speak, I'm sure he will have a decision already made.
Okay, and Wayne Lucas has seized the gray in there. Not the best form in the race, but you know Wayne, if he can get him into the Kentucky Derby, he's certainly going to be in there. And it would always be fun to have Mr. Lucas as the 88-year-old trainer extraordinaire be in the race. Randy, your thoughts on the Jeff Ruby Stakes?
Let me mention a couple things right off the top. First of all, I can't let you get away with talking about Rich Strike as it relates to the Kentucky Derby and not mentioning two Phils who won the race last year and should have won the Kentucky Derby, but didn't, and who was the best three-year-old in the country last year and unfortunately never got a chance to actually prove that as an ironclad fact. Secondly, we've already talked about Frankie Dettori. I don't, you know, let's not bury the lead here. He's riding in the Jeff Ruby at Turfway Park. Frankie Dettori at Turfway in Florence, Kentucky, for the very first time in his career. Talk about a culture change. How about that? He has never ridden at Turfway Park. I double checked that. He is right now scheduled to ride Dancing Groom for Antonio Sano, who is the fifth place finisher in the Fountain of Youth. It's Frankie Dettori knew when he signed up with Ron Anderson as his agent, Ron will put you on a plane and will fly you around the country to wherever you might have a chance to make money. And Frankie Dettori finds himself in suburban Cincinnati, basically, on Saturday. Now, I agree with you. I think Endlessly is the horse to beat. Northern Flame, I thought, ran a very good race in the Rebel, finishing third behind Timberlake and Common Defense. He's never been on synthetic. It's a wide open race, really. Lucky Jeremy was a nice third place finisher in the Sunland Derby. He's never run on synthetic. It's a real turnaround for this race. Normally, when you look at success in the Jeff Ruby historically, right, the big majority of the horses that have won this race since it was moved to synthetic had never won a race on dirt previously. And quite a few of them never won on dirt ever in their entire racing careers. Most of them prepped on the turf. But what's unusual this year is that for whatever reason, Turfway Park decided to move the prep, the Battaglia, which has been the traditional prep race for this, to the point that the Battaglia is now run 3 weeks before the Jeff Ruby. And as we know from the Triple Crown, especially, trainers do not like to run their horses back that quickly. And as a result, the 1-2 finishers from the Battaglia are both skipping the Jeff Ruby, and they're running elsewhere. And some of the other Battaglia horses are running in the Rushaway instead of the Jeff Ruby. So you get far more horses than usual that have zero synthetic form. And I agree, it really kind of makes this race into a crapshoot.
It's a good betting race, that is for sure. But for me, Endlessly is definitely the horse to beat. He brings his jockey, Umbi Rispoli, with him for trainer Michael McCarthy, who's had an awful lot of success at Turfway already. And let's just not forget, this is $700,000. They're not running for $200,000. $700,000. Frankie Dettori, like he mentioned in First Things First, all he wants to do is win the Kentucky Derby. He's already running it once, but that is his main goal leading up to the Derby, is to find that Derby horse. So him and his agent, Ron Anderson, are going to search hell and high water to try and find that horse. And it starts right here with Dancing Groom.
If he wins the Kentucky Derby with Dancing Groom, I will bow 1,000 times to the on the Frankie Dettori shrine.
Yes, not exactly the best mount for the Kentucky Derby, but we will see how he fares in the Jeff Ruby Stakes on Saturday. Okay, the prep for the Kentucky Oaks is called the Bourbonette Oaks. That's the 11th race on the card. And some interesting horses in here. Again, no, you know, real standouts. Again, same factor. You have some that have never run on the synthetic surface, like Alpine Princess, if she's cross-entered in this race. But Randy, you said she's running at the fairgrounds, so far as you understand?
No, she's running at Turfway.
Okay. Right. So she's got she's never been on synthetic. She's got a rebound off a kind of a dull effort in the Rachel Alexander, where she was beaten 9 lengths by Tarifa. An interesting horse in here is, how about Pink Polka Dots in here? Has run twice in its career, in her career, both times on the grass, should transfer that form to the synthetic. And Randy, from a buyer figure standpoint, even though she's coming out of allowance race, she's 2 for 2. That 81 buyer last time out puts her right in the thick of things. That's one of the better buyer numbers in the entire field. Only Alpine Princess has a faster number, which she got in the Untappable. But much like the Jeff Ruby Stakes, you know, there's not a lot of A-listers in here, but somebody's going to come out of this with a big win on the resume and head to Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Oaks.
Yeah, I would imagine Alpine Princess would be the favorite. I think she may be the kind of favorite to take a shot against. The Untappable, you mentioned, is sort of her signature win. But that was at the fairgrounds. It was on dirt, obviously. It was a very easy pace that day. She controlled the pace on a clear lead. And as we know, synthetic plays closer to turf than it does to dirt, and it's not nearly as big of an advantage to set the pace on a synthetic surface as it is on a dirt surface. And they'll have to go with her. Luis Saez is aboard. She breaks from post position number one. Her best race was on the lead, so you can expect that that's what they're going to try to do with Alpine Princess. But I think she is a bet against, and I have no idea who the bet on would be because I don't have a strong feeling. Pink Polka Dots looks as good or better than anything else in there.
Yeah, it's between, I believe, Pink Polka Dots for Jo Sharpe. She's 2 for 2, comes out of some very, very live racings, including that maiden race at the fairgrounds. Lots of next out winners in that. And then the filly right to her outside, You Know Nothing for trainer Christophe Clément. There's a lot more there beneath the bonnet than meets the eye. She does already have a win over the synthetic down there, the Tapita at Gulfstream Park, which is certainly going to help her case. Two daughters a candy ride. I'm going to do a candy ride exacta.
And one other thing I want to mention, to me, the best race on the card is the Kentucky Cup Classic for older horses going 1 1/8. It'll be race number 10. It's a grade 3. If you look at that race, as opposed to the races we've been talking about, the 3-year-old races, there are a lot of horses in here with established synthetic form. And if you use, for example, if you use Formulator on DRF and you go to customize, you can change the past performances to which you only see synthetic, which it would be a good thing to do for the Kentucky Cup Classic because there are some synthetic demons in here. And what an outstanding race that is. Best on the card.
Yeah, good card. They also have the Latonia Stakes and to go with the Kentucky Cup Classic and a bunch of other. There's a race named after Animal Kingdom. Yeah, that Rushaway Stakes. So the big day of racing at Turfway Park, as Randy said, just outside Cincinnati.
Are you covering any of these, Randy?
Yes. On NBC on Saturday, we will be doing the Louisiana Derby and the Fairgrounds Oaks, as well as the Jeff Ruby live.
Great.
And we'll cover some of the, like the Bourbonette, you know, on tape as well.
I do want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. Now, this week's XBTV Work of the Week is Newgate. And yes, Frankie was right. Bob Baffert lets him nowhere near him in the morning. He was on hand to watch him work just 2 weeks after his big cap win. He absolutely sizzled 5 furlongs in company in 58 and 1. The track was very, very fast that morning. The best of 80 works of the distance. And just look at him cruising down the lane. You wouldn't believe he just took down the big cap 2 weeks before. Newgate is expected to ship out to Dubai for the Grade 1 Dubai World Cup next Saturday. Newgate is this week's Work of the Week.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
TD and Riders Room also brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. As we know, joining a West Point partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie. West Point added 6 horses, 3 colts, 3 fillies at OBS March. If you're interested in those, and why wouldn't you be, you can check them out at www.westpointtb.com and get the latest on their availability. Now the West Point focus from a sale perspective will turn to OBS April, and West Point now can celebrate a graduate from that sale. We talked last week about how Jackson Traveler was going to run in the Grade 3 Whitmore at Oaklawn Park. He did, and he won by about 1/16 of an inch. Tejano Twist was bearing down on him in the final strides, and in a race that I couldn't tell who won at the wire, it was Jackson Traveler for trainer Steve Asmussen and jockey Flavian Pratt. West Point bought him at OBS for $140,000 in the COVID year of 2020, and now he's a 6-year-old closing in on $1 million in earnings. Learn more again at westpointtb.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank my partners, Randy Moss and Zoe Cabin, and our special Green Group guest of the week, Jake DeLome. Also, our editors and our producers. The producers are Katie Petruniak and Anthony LaRocca, and the editors, Aaliyah LaRocca and Nathan Wilkinson. Should be an exciting weekend of racing, especially at the fairgrounds. Everybody enjoy, and we'll talk to you next week.